This podcast is supported by 23andMe.co.uk, a personalised genetic service available in the UK. The 23andMe genetic analysis is based on a small saliva sample. People in the UK can learn about their genetic information that published studies associate with conditions like blood clotting, cystic fibrosis, and even response to certain medicines. More information is available at 23andme.co.uk.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you for joining us again tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. I'm your host, Chris Mascaro, and tonight Bob and I have an all-pro, all-Hall of Fame lineup for you tonight. We've got a couple of great Hall of Famers that are going to join us. We also have got two of the biggest and best from the world of sports marketing, plus three really great friends of the show to share with you tonight. So we're going to have a lot of fun. So we're really glad you're here. You're going to enjoy the night with us. So like we say, relax, settle in. Let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next couple of hours. TNT is brought to you by former Bengals and Falcons tight end Reggie Kelly and the great folks over at Kyven Foods. Be sure to spice up everything on your menu by adding Kyven salsa, sauces, and spices to whatever it is you're cooking. Check them out online at Kyven, and Kyven is K-Y-V-A-N. The number 82.com, so Kyven82.com to see all of their great products. TNT is also sponsored by Dr. Peter Candelora and the great folks over at Coastal Orthopedics. If you're living with joint pain, stop. Do what the Gridiron Greats do to get relief. Check them out online at bone-dr.com. Plus, check out the Louisville Slugger Museum and Factory. If you love baseball and you haven't been, you really got to go. It's a wonderful place. You can find out more information about the Louisville Slugger Museum and Factory online at sluggermuseum.com. And we also want to give a shout-out to our friends over at the Gridiron Greats organization. They're doing great things to help take care of the guys who played long before there were any such thing as six-figure salaries or health care coverage. Find out all about them and help them out if you can at gridirongreats.org. All right, first up tonight in our 12th man segment with Sports One Marketing CEO David Meltzer and now best-selling author David Meltzer is going to be his special guest, Ravens Hall of Fame tackle Jonathan Ogden. We'll hear what they're working on together when they join us here in just a few minutes. Following them will be truly one of the great guys in sports and in life, and a wonderful guest that's been on the show a number of times, former Bears and Panthers wide receiver Moose Muhammad. We've really enjoyed getting to know Moose over the last couple of years. He can tell you all about what it's like to lose a heartbreaker to the Patriots in the Super Bowl. His Panthers were on the receiving end of one of Adam Vinatieri's last-second field goals to win Super Bowl 38, one of the four Super Bowl victories now for Tom Brady and the Patriots. So we'll hear what he has to say about this year's Super Bowl and how it ended. But with respect to Moose, did you know that he is in the top 30 all-time in receptions and receiving yards? So not many guys in the history of the game did it better than Moose. Plus, the Panthers named him Man of the Year back in 1999 for all his charitable and volunteer work. We'll talk about all of those things. Moose will be with us about 15 minutes from now. At the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by former Steelers wide receiver Ernie Mills. We'll get Ernie's thoughts on what our Steelers need to do this offseason to compete for a Super Bowl next year and what they'll have to do. You know, they'll have to do that with one of the hardest schedules in the league. If you haven't seen the Steelers schedule next year, holy smokes, it's murder's row. So we'll talk to Ernie about that. He's also been a wide receivers coach at the University of Jacksonville and more recently at Florida A&M. We'll see where he might be patrolling the sidelines next season. Ernie will be here about a half an hour from now. Later this hour, we're going to be joined by Vikings Hall of Fame defensive tackle John Randall. Johnny's a great guy and a big golfer, by the way. We'll talk to John about his Hall of Fame experience, what it was like playing with and against our mutual friend, Hall of Fame quarterback Warren Moon, when Warren was with Houston and then a member of the Vikings. And plus, you know, where John likes to tee it up when he joins us about 50 minutes from now. Then we'll kick off the next hour with another good friend, Super Agent Lee Steinberg. And Lee is absolutely one of our favorite people to talk to. And he's also one of the busiest men in sports and in entertainment. I can't imagine what it's like to try to keep up with Lee's schedule. Lee hosts his own show as well on Yahoo Sports Radio called Behind Closed Doors. We'll talk about that. Plus, you know, one of his current clients is Garrett Gilbert, who was a six-round draft pick by the Rams last season out of SMU. He was later released later in the year and picked up by the Patriots in late December, so just in time to be a part of their Super Bowl run. We'll see what it was like for he and Garrett when Lee joins us a little over an hour from now. And then we're going to wrap up the show with former Notre Dame and Colts linebacker Devon McDonald. And you're not going to find a nicer person on the planet than Devon. He was a part of Notre Dame's last national championship team back in 1988. We'll get his thoughts on where that program is at, plus get his thoughts on the Colts, Deflategate, and various other things when Devon is here to wrap up the show with us about 90 minutes from now. So as always, we're wall-to-wall with great guests for you tonight on TNT, and we can't thank you again for taking the journey with us. But before we get started, let's go ahead and bring in my co-host, Mr. Bob Lazzari. Bob, bitterly cold down here in Atlanta. Lows last night and tonight around 10. I can only imagine how bad it has been for you up there in eastern Connecticut, my friend. How are you tonight?
I'm holding on, Chris. It's going down to zero tonight. Tomorrow night, it's supposed to be much colder tomorrow night. I can't imagine what the wind chill would be. And then a storm on the weekend, Chris. It just, we can't get ahead here. We can't dig out. I was up on the roof today trying to get some snow off before this new storm is coming. It's supposed to have some moisture with it. So it's just a nightmare. You talk to anyone in New England, they're just want to get to like the second week of March, Chris, just to hear that it's a different month. This February's been one to remember.
It's zero tonight, and it's going to be much colder tomorrow. Holy cow. At some point, you know, you got to imagine. And I mean, you know, Bob, we've heard forever about, you know, games and conditions in Green Bay and, you know, our friends up in Canada and all that sort of stuff. But at some point, it's just got to be, you know, it's just so cold. It doesn't matter how much cold. You're not going to be able to tell the difference. It's just cold. It's just ridiculously cold.
And when you hit, here's the test, Chris, when it gets to about 25, which it did a couple of days ago, it actually got up to 25, it felt like 70. So that's the test. That's the kind of winter it's been. I can't explain it to anyone who doesn't live up here.
Yeah, no kidding, Bob. My condolences, my friend. To your point, you know, spring seems like it's just around the corner based on the calendar. I'm sure it feels like it's a thousand years away, but you can't get here fast enough for you and all of our friends up in the Northeast. Holy cow, I feel badly for you.
Well, thanks, Chris. One day at a time.
Right. All right, we want to kick off the show like we do every week by saluting our military personnel listening in on the Armed Forces Radio Network. We want to pass along our sincere thanks to all our veterans and everyone currently serving in every branch of the military and public service around the world. Thank you. Thank you for the sacrifices you either made or are making now every day for every one of us. We appreciate what you do to protect the freedoms that we all have and the liberty which allows the rest of us to do what we do. Our sincere thanks as well to Sean Cruz and the wonderful folks over at Armed Forces Radio. You know, it's an honor for us to be a part of your network. You can find our show by going to armedforcesradionetwork.org. And like we always say, please give those guys a follow on Twitter at the AFRN for the Armed Forces Radio Network. That's important to them, too. Also want to remind everyone that you can stream or download our show for free from our site, ThursdayNightTailgate.com, plus our friends over at Boost Radio are streaming our show every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. You can go to BoostRadioNetwork.com and click on the on-air link that you're going to find in the upper right-hand corner of their homepage to hear our show on Friday nights. You can also find us on iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes as well. And you can take us with you everywhere you go on your mobile device by downloading the Stitcher or Player.fm app as well. All right, let's get things rolling tonight with a message from our friends at Kyven Foods, brought to you by former Bengals and Falcons tight end Reggie Kelly.
Add great flavor to your next tailgate party with Kaivin salsas. Former NFL tight end Reggie Kelly created these salsas for dipping chips and much more. In hot and mild flavors, Kaivin salsas make a great marinade. They are terrific in meatloaf and are super toppers for everything from baked potatoes to scrambled eggs. It's a great ingredient to enjoy in a variety of family favorite meals. And some people say Kaivin salsa is a meal to itself. With all the possibilities, Kaivin is truly salsa with soul. Kaivin salsas are also made from natural ingredients, and they are preservative-free. So look for Kaivin, that's K-Y-V-A-N, at area Walmart stores or online. Click on the Kaivin logo on our website to check retail and online locations. More information at Kaivin82.com.
If you want your guests to be raving about your next house party or your hockey or spring training, now, pitchers and catchers are just around the corner, folks. I promise, Bob. Spring training is just around the corner. If any of your upcoming tailgate parties, you want to knock the socks off of your guests, well, then you're going to want to serve them plenty of Kaivin food, salsas, sauces, and spices to liven up everything you're going to put on your menu. Be sure to check out their recipes on our site, ThursdayNightTailgate.com, as well as their own, Kaivin82.com. And again, Kaivin is K-Y-V-A-N, the number 82.com. And give those folks a like on Facebook. That's important to them, too. When you try Kaivin, you're going to appreciate the goodness. All right, a couple quick announcements before we get to our 12th Man segment with our friend David Meltzer. First, the Jets Cruise. You've heard us talk about the Jets Cruise over the last several weeks. Bob, you know our friend Gretchen Bierenbaum, at GMoney36, and money being M-O-N-A-Y. So at GMoney36, Gretchen's doing some work now with the Jets, helping them promote, you know, the first ever Jets Cruise, which is the ultimate Jets fans vacation experience, featuring several current and alumni players, members of their front office, and, you know, most importantly, some of the most dedicated Jets fans you're going to find anywhere from around the world. The cruise will have interactive events, including a Q&A session. There'll be Beach Olympics, Kids Play 60 activities. There's going to be autograph and photo sessions, private parties and competitions. It's four nights of fun in the sun with Jets players. Truly a unique experience you're not going to want to miss, particularly if you're a Jets fan. For more information, go to nyjetscruise.com. All right, now joining us on the Kaivin Foods guest line in our 12th Man segment is Sports One Marketing CEO and now best-selling author David Meltzer with his special guest tonight, Hall of Fame tackle Jonathan Ogden. David, what are you guys working on together?
To Las Vegas, and the biggest birthday present I ever got was to watch the Baltimore game with Jonathan. Vincey Glenn gave me the best birthday gift of the year. He brought Jonathan Ogden to my birthday party to watch the Baltimore Ravens, and unfortunately it wasn't the outcome we wanted, but it was a great game, and it was an honor, and I have never realized how small I am until I sit next to Jonathan and watch a football game, I'll tell you that. But bigger than his body is his heart, is what I learned from getting to know him, and let my wife beat him in a little Donkey Kong as well. He put her in the Donkey Kong Hall of Fame while we were there. It was quite an honor. And Jonathan is working with us and coming to our Unstoppable Gala, where they're honoring the great Warren Moon with his Humanitarian Award. And
right.
As I told you, that Nobel Peace Prize winner, Malala. We have a WarrenMoonChallenge.com.
Ah, you're back. All right, we lost you there for a second.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, so we have a WarrenMoonChallenge.com where you can go on and help educate kids in Africa. But anyway, I want to introduce Jonathan, and I thought maybe we could ask him a few questions about some of his inspirational stories or what really inspired him to have such a great career and be just a great person. So I want to welcome Jonathan and thank him so much for not only coming on today but coming to my birthday party.
Man, you're welcome, man. We had a great time there. The outcome wasn't quite what we were looking for, you know, and the refs cheated the Ravens. But, you know, that's okay, though. We had a fun time. I enjoyed everything there, the video games, the people, the food. We had a fantastic time. I was glad I was able to come out there and hang out with you.
Thank you, thank you. And thanks for supporting Warren and all of the different things that we do, from Super Bowl, Pro Bowl, you know, we want you to come down to the Masters. I know you're going to make it to our Unstoppable event in Los Angeles, and we'll take good care of you when you get there. And the boys are coming out from the Armed Forces radio here, Chris, and hopefully Bob or Angelo, whoever they can pick. But just give us a quick story, Jonathan, if you wouldn't mind. Just something that has inspired you growing up or playing ball. You know, our segment's about inspiring people to do good for others and to help others, and in return, you'll see how their life is enhanced. And I thought, you know, I've heard so many stories from you and from Lindsay, and I thought maybe if you shared one with us, it'd be great for this short segment.
Well, just, I mean, just helping others. I mean, that's something that people did for me when I was young. People helped me with football, with life skills, with everything that you need to make it as an individual. So, you know, I've kind of done the same thing. I started a foundation to help young kids gain self-esteem, through academics and athletics. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, just like Warren does with his, you know, with him getting this award, the Unstoppable Award, you know, it's all about helping people and giving back. And I'm so proud of him for what he's done, you know, post-career, and, you know, just the way he's continued to be a pillar in the society. And I try to do the same thing, you know, every day with my son, with, you know, other kids, just anyone who needs help. You know, I've been blessed to be very successful in this life, and I try to give back.
Yeah, that's awesome. And you do it so well and humbly. And, you know, there's no mistaking that your heart is even bigger than that, that house is in that unbelievable specimen that you are. You make me look like a dwarf.
I'm not
a dwarf, I swear.
Everybody looks small next to me.
I know even more than small next to you. You're just awesome. Anyway, we love it. We want to encourage everyone to not only help others, but encourage them to help others. That's how significant change happens. And as you and I both know, we live these blessed lives, but it doesn't happen by itself, you know, and it takes a village. And, you know, that's our concept here with the Unstoppable, is to have these villages and sponsor villages to provide clean water and education so that every kid in the world can be educated. Because I believe, and I know you believe, Jonathan, that education is power, and that's why you created your foundation, are going to empower all these children. They need to be educated. They need to liberate themselves and do things for other people, and we're all going to be better off for it. And I know our time's running out, but wanted to thank you again for everything. Anyone that comes on to WarrenMoonChallenge.com, please, you're helping a great cause. You're helping children around the world become better people to help even more people. So thank you guys, Jonathan, Chris. And Chris, do you have anything for Jonathan before I leave?
Yeah, Jonathan, before we let you go, first of all, you made mention of your foundation. Talk about, mm-hmm. you know, for folks that want to get more information or get involved with what you're doing, how can they find out about the foundation you've started?
It's the JonathanOgdenFoundation.org, and, you know, we're throwing a bowling event here in Las Vegas, April, 19th, or CampOgden.org. There's also, I have two websites. We try to help the community here in Las Vegas as well, where I live, and we also obviously try to take care. We do golf tournaments and boxing events as far as fundraisers in the Baltimore area. So, you know, we're just trying to, you know, help the kids who want to help, you know, and that's, you know, there are a lot of kids out there who just need the help and they want to be great, but someone just has to be able to help them. And those are kids we're trying to help, you know, the same way as Unstoppable is trying to help the villages and kids. You know, we do the same thing with kids in our local communities, trying to make this world a better place the same way.
That's
so
awesome.
JonathanOgdenFoundation.org and CAMP Ogden.org.
That's fantastic. David, Jonathan, thank you so much for taking time out of your night to be a part of the show. Jonathan, we hope you'll come back sometime and spend a segment with us. We'd like to talk to you a little bit more about your amazing career, what it was, you know, like for you being inducted into the Hall of Fame. Talk maybe a little bit more about some upcoming events you've got with your foundation, because you had such a great career, and David speaks so highly of you. We'd love to have you as a part of the show on another time. David, congratulations again to you for being a bestseller, reaching that bestseller status last week. We look forward to catching up with you, as always, you know, again next week. The Connected to Goodness book, Manifesting Everything You Desire in Business and in Life, a wonderful book. You know how much we think about it. We can't recommend it highly enough. Available on Amazon.com or going directly to David's site, ConnectedToGoodness.com. But great job, guys. Thanks so much, Jonathan. We hope we get the opportunity to catch up with you again sometime.
Sounds like the plan.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks, David.
Thanks,
take care.
Guys.
We talk to you again next week.
Right on. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night, now.
Great stuff, Bob. You know, I mean, that, you know, the amount of good things, and you know, we've struggled with having enough time to really get into the Thursday night tailgate spotlight on the positive. We try to get those in as we have the opportunity to. But this is another example of, you know, the spotlight on the positive that people don't know enough about. You know, Jonathan Ogden's Foundation, again, jonathanogdenfoundation.org, doing as much as we can for kids, you know, and being, you know, great examples. There's way more examples, and we're going to talk about this later tonight in the show with a couple of our guests, but way more examples of the good things going on. Unfortunately, you know, the bad things are what we hear so much about, and that's why, you know, we're so passionate about trying to get more of the spotlight on the positive out there. But this is another great example of just that.
Yeah, another good guy, Chris. We have to get him on the show, and it seems like David Meltzer has the same modus operandi that you do. If you are to enter his circle of friends, you have to be a very, very good person, whether you played sports or not. And Ogden, we know the history. I mean, Chris, UCLA, valued education, all 12 years with the Ravens. He did it the right way. Went to the same high school, Chris, as our good friend Nick Lowry. So they both made out well, both put a big emphasis on education, and can't wait to speak with Mr. Ogden in the future.
Yeah, absolutely right. Me too. All right, we've got our next guest, Musin Muhammad, hanging on the line. I'm going to get to him right on the other side of this station identification.
This is Reggie Kelly, former Cincinnati Bengals and Atlanta Falcons tight end, and you're listening to TNT, Thursday Night Tailgate. Brace yourself for the explosion.
Now back with us on the Kaivan Foods guest line is Musin Muhammad. This is Moose's fourth visit with us on the show, so we're so excited that he's becoming a semi-regular part of the show. Let me give you a brief reminder about his great career. He was a second-round draft pick by the Carolina Panthers in 1996 out of Michigan State, was selected to play in the Pro Bowl twice in 1999 and again in 2004, led the league in receptions in 2000 with 102 and in receiving yards in 2004 with 1,405 yards. Over the course of his career, he amassed 860 receptions for 11,438 yards and 62 touchdowns. He was a part of the 2003 NFC champion Carolina Panthers that nearly knocked off the Patriots in Super Bowl 38. Last May, our partners at the Gridiron Greats organization inducted Moose into the Gridiron Greats Hall of Fame. And like I mentioned in the intro to the show, what you may not know is Moose ranks 23rd all-time in receptions with 860, like I mentioned, 27th in receiving yards. So over the course of NFL history, not many wide receivers did it better than Moose did, and we are honored to have him back with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Moose, Chris and Bob, how you doing, my friend?
Chris and Bob, I am doing awesome and glad to be on the show again.
Hey, Moose.
So Moose, how's the family?
You know, everyone is doing well. You know, kids are getting up. They're growing fast, but all is going well with the family. You know, really happy about some of the progress and some of the things that are going on right now.
That's great. Moose, so, following the Super Bowl, another Patriots victory that was razor thin and could have easily gone the other way and maybe should have gone the other way. One of the things that came to my mind when we were fortunate enough to get you back on the show is, I bet Moose can name that tune in three notes. Were you watching the game, you know, and thinking, I feel for you, Seattle. I've been there, done that.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, you know, being on the other end of a Tom Brady victory, you know, it's a tune that I've heard played before. So, mm-hmm. You know, knowing the Robert Kraft organization, and knowing you know, just the strength of the program there, and Coach Belichick and what they do over there, you know, I actually had them favored to win that game. Even though Seattle has been, you know, a dominant team throughout the course of the season, so on one part I wasn't surprised, but you know, it was kind of deja vu a little bit.
Moose, I'm a Steelers fan, and I can't watch replays of the Super Bowls that they lost, particularly Super Bowl 30. Just too painful for me as a fan to watch that. Now, you had four catches for 140 yards and a touchdown in Super Bowl 38, including an 85-yard touchdown catch that gave you guys a lead midway through the fourth quarter. So every year when ESPN Classic is replaying all the Super Bowls, do you watch Super Bowl 38 or too painful for you too?
You know what? It is too painful. I would trade that catch, which was the longest catch in Super Bowl touchdown in Super Bowl history. I would trade that record for the ring. I absolutely would.
No doubt.
It's a prestigious record, and I think it's going to be difficult to break. But I would trade it for the ring. Absolutely.
The difference between being, an all-time great and being viewed less favorably, if you will, like I said a moment ago, really razor thin. If Vinatieri misses those field goals, against you guys, against the Rams, if Seattle gives the ball to Lynch and he scores, suddenly the way we're looking at Tom Brady and Bill Belichick may be a little differently than we do right now. And perhaps you're sitting there with a Super Bowl ring on your finger. It's been 11 years since Super Bowl 38. How much differently would your life have been over the last decade if you guys had actually won that game?
That's an interesting question, I don't know how much different it would be. The year after the Super Bowl in 2003, I actually, led the NFL in touchdown catches, and that's when I went to Chicago, and I wound up playing with the Bears for 3 years, and one of those years went to a Super Bowl with the Chicago Bears. And I think I just became a little bit too expensive for the Carolina Panthers' taste and had to take the show on the road, so to speak. But I just don't know, where life would take you. But, God doesn't make mistakes, man. I truly believe that. If I was supposed to have a ring, I would, I think. As I look at the body of work that I put together throughout my career, I think it's just, a situation where I just put in a lot of work. I mean, I was focused more on the work than I was on the results. And, at the end of the day, it wound up being, a situation where I got a lot of, I got paid well and compensated well. And, I did some pretty big things in my career coming from a little small town like Lansing, Michigan. I was the first kid in my city to ever be drafted, So, I don't look at what I did as a failure.
No, absolutely not. Bob, yeah. Questions for Moose?
And Moose, we always love talking to you, and welcome back, my friend. And Moose, we remember you, I think we've mentioned this before, as a very physical wide receiver. And it's obvious, looking at your stats, Moose, that you rarely missed any games. And you said you did a lot of hard work, but, a lot of that has to be genetic, Moose. I mean, a lot of the NFL, how tough a game that is, to come back every week like you did and put up the numbers you did. Was it a lot of off-season discipline that kept you on the field during the season?
I was sick when it came to the – I probably was borderline, over the top with it. I would leave the football facility, and I would literally go to another workout. I had a baseball coach here at a local high school that would turn the lights on for me on the football field, and I had a guy who used to throw me balls, a college quarterback that, didn't go on, but he was a good friend of mine, and he would throw me balls at night. So I would always get two workouts in every single day. That's before training camp even started. The first thing I bought when I was in the NFL was a jug machine, right? That's the ball shooting machines. And so I have one personally in my garage. It was the first investment. I think I bought it before I even bought a car. And and I caught, I don't know how many balls every single day, and I just was – I was possessed with being the best that I could possibly be, and I worked hard at it. I mean, genetically, I was blessed with, I was blessed with some gifts. My dad was a football player. He played back in the day at Michigan State. He played for Duffy Doherty, and it was a walk-on, and
And then, you know, I eventually, you know, followed in his footsteps at Michigan State. My brother played for the Army. He went to West Point. He was an engineer. I think he got all the brains. I might have got all the physical talent. But, you know, he played football as well for West Point. And so, you know, we were an athletic family. My brother was my quarterback, and I was a running back. We ran an option in high school. He was a year younger than me. You know, I was a running back then, and I was a linebacker. And the first time I played wide receiver was at Michigan State, and I struggled. I mean, I didn't start as a receiver until my senior year in college. And I think my career, you know, because I had to fight so hard just to get on the field, you know, it made me appreciate the you know, a day's hard work. And I continued that same work habit going into the NFL, and every day I fought like I wasn't a starter. And, you know, I had a coach once tell me this. He said, you know, you have to work like you never made a dollar. You have to live like there's no tomorrow, and then you have to dance like no one's watching. So, you know, you got to know how to have fun and work hard and have fun. Work hard, play hard.
Great stuff right there, Moose. And you know, when I think of Carolina, those teams in the 90s, if I told you, Moose, that Steve Smith would still be playing in 2014 and still contributing, one of the more intense guys you know, whoever's played the game, just give us your thoughts about Steve Smith. I can't believe he's still around.
Well, no, I believe he's still around. I mean, you know, Steve was a young guy when I was a little bit older than Steve, maybe 4 or 5 years older than us to the league. And, you know, the funny thing is when Steve came in, we drafted, you know, George Seifert regime, we drafted Steve as a special teams guy. I mean, that's back in the day when we had Patrick Jeffers that came over from Dallas Cowboys. We had Donald Hayes that was there and eventually finished his career with the Patriots. And, you know, just a Rocket Ismail. We had a number of guys that were there at Carolina. So, you know, here comes, you know, Steve Smith, special teams guy, had no interest in playing wide receiver until I told him. I said, well, you know what the average kick returner makes, right? He's what? You know, I said, well, Mel Gray made this much and that much. I said, well, you know, average wide receivers, you know, average $5 million a year. He goes, I want to play wide receiver. So from that point on, you know, he was hell-bent to leather to play wide receiver. And every year he got better and better and better and better. And, you know, Steve eventually, man, I mean, can you believe that, you know, as tenacious as I was on the field, you know, I was the voice of reason for Steve Smith, you know, because he was a little bit more fierce than I was. But, you know, the companionship and the friendship that we developed on the field and off the field, man, it was awesome. We're still friends today. I talked to him the other day, and, you know, he's just a fierce competitor, man. I mean, iron sharpens iron, man. You can imagine being on the practice field when you got me, Smitty, you know, Ricky Prohl out there, you know, guys like that, every day pushing each other, making each other better. So, no, I mean, Ricky Prohl, who's a receiver coach at Michigan State, I mean, at Carolina Panthers, he played 17 years in the league. I played 14. Steve's on his – he just finished 14, so he's on 15. And so, you know, guys that have the work habits and the ethics and all that kind of stuff, those are the guys that wind up having a long career. So, no, it doesn't surprise me, man. I tell you, he's fun to watch. He's still fun to watch. He's still putting up numbers and still having a great time out there. And that's what it's all about.
Right.
Moose, one of the young guys that looks like he's going to be something special, particularly with the Panthers, is Kelvin Benjamin. He could be a dominant player in this league for a long time. What are your thoughts about what you've seen so far from him?
Well, you know, back in the day, I was considered a big receiver. I don't know about that anymore. You know, when you walk up to guys like that, I mean, you know, it's like, are you kidding? Calvin Johnson, Kelvin Benjamin. I mean, these guys are just, you know, 6'5". It's unfair. You know, it's unfair. I mean, what are the corners going to look like in the next 5 years? You know, Richard Sherman and you know, guys like you know, you look at these guys and they're 6'2", 6'3", you know, you never thought that corners would be that tall and you never thought the receivers would be that tall. I mean, you know, back in the day, you know, Michael Johnson that played with the Browns back in the day, you know, was probably the tallest wide receiver that anyone has ever seen. And J.J. Stokes, if you guys remember that name from back when he played with San Francisco, you know, those guys were like, you know, they were on the cutting edge of, you know, what was to come. And so, you know, you look at Kelvin Benjamin, same prototype, man, a guy who can really go up and catch the deep ball. He struggled from time to time catching more of the simple balls, but he makes the difficult look easy. Talented kid, man. And, I've gone out watching practice. I mean, I think he's going to be a special player, off to a great start in his career. I'm just excited for what he can accomplish on the field and being able to, take the game to the next level. I think he's one of those guys that can be a trendsetter.
Moose, I mentioned all your stats, in the intro. For a guy who did as much as you, contributed as much as you, was such a big part of the Carolina Panthers, who do we need to contact to get you in the Carolina Panthers Hall of Honor? I'm amazed at
right a Larry to Jerry Richardson, man. I can't believe these guys haven't put me in yet, but that's okay. That's
right.
Okay. You know, write a letter to the owner, Jerry Richardson, man. I think he reads every single email and, every single letter that he gets. I don't know if you guys read a recent story. I thought it was really heart-touching, but, there was this kid that, little kid that didn't have a favorite NFL football team, and he was looking to be a fan of some team. So he sent every single owner, all 32 owners, a letter saying, hey, I need a reason why I should be a fan of your team. And Jerry Richardson was the only owner that sent him back a letter, a return letter to his email letter, and said, we'd love for you to be a Carolina Panther fan, and I think he got the kid hooked. So that was a great story.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. That is fantastic. Yes, so I wrote that down, writing a letter to Jerry Richardson, because if he's going to read it, we got to make sure that we are promoting you. Like I said, beyond my comprehension how you're not in their Hall of Honor already. Moose, one more before we let you go. We've got our next guest, Ernie Mills, hanging on the line. We got to get to Ernie, but you've got a wonderful foundation that we've talked about on the every time you've joined us. I want to keep reminding our listeners about it, the M2 Foundation for Kids. So remind our listeners what your foundation does and how they can A, get involved, and B, get more information about it.
Yeah, well, M2 Foundation for Kids is we're focused on at-risk youth. And we just provide leadership, mentorship through athletics, through education, through a number of workshops and venues that, allow the kids to reach their full potential. And, right now we have a lot of basketball programs doing stuff with the young ladies. If you go onto my website, it actually is ncspartans.org. North Carolina Spartans like Michigan State and NC where I'm at. So ncspartans.org is the website for people that want to go on and check out what we do. And I'll tell you this, man, as old as I am, I even play with Ernie Mills, who you guys, I know he's a big-time Pittsburgh guy, but Ernie finished his career in Carolina. And so when Ernie comes on, make sure you tell him I said hello. And I missed him, man. We had a great time playing together for at least 1 or 2 years.
That's fantastic. Moose, thank you so much for coming back on the show. You're always fantastic to talk to. We can't thank you enough for continuing to come back from time to time and be a part of the show. We hope you'll do so because, your insights and the things that you share with us and the story is always so fantastic.
Well, you guys always have the best guests on this show, man. I was just listening to Jonathan Ogden, and man, what an awesome career he had, and he's just a guy that you definitely want to model yourself after if you are a young athlete or even a professional person. So, model citizen, great role model, awesome player, man. Hopefully, I'll see him in the Hall of Fame one day.
There you go. Yeah. All right, Moose. Take care. We look forward to catching up with you again real soon. In the meantime, all the best to you and your family.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, Moose.
All right. Take care, Moose. Bob, every time Moose comes on the show, I just love talking to the guy. I mean, not only the stories that he shares with us, but just a great person.
You'll meet very few guys who are more level-headed, Chris. That's what's refreshing about Moose. And people, again, you've mentioned how great a player he was, how he's not in that honor down in Carolina. I have no idea either. People don't realize he went back to Carolina after the few years in Chicago at the age of 35, played 2 more years, and had about 1,500 yards receiving, Chris. So the guy was amazing. He's been on the TV show up here. He's he's one of the best guys we've talked to, and we've had many friends on the show. He's right at the top of that list.
Absolutely right. All right, we've got our next guest, Ernie Mills, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Ernie on the other side of the station identification.
This is Christine Lisi, and you're listening to Thursday Night Tailgate, where NFL stars go to tell their stories with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari on the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Now back with us on the Kyven Foods guest line is Ernie Mills. Let me remind you about Ernie's background. He was a third-round draft pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1991 out of the University of Florida, where in his senior season, 1990, he was named first-team All-SEC and led the SEC in receiving touchdowns and was second in receiving yards. Played in the NFL from 1990 to 1999 for the Steelers, Panthers, as Moose just said, and the Cowboys. Over the course of Ernie's career, he had just under 200 receptions for a little over 2,900 yards and scored 20 touchdowns. So think about that. One out of every 10 catches Ernie had was for a touchdown, which is an amazing ratio. He added another 121 yards rushing and just over 1,800 yards in kick returns. Recently spent time as a wide receivers coach for the Florida A&M Rattlers, and where he joined a couple of his former Steeler teammates, Ernie Holmes, who was the head coach, and our friend LeVon Kirkland, who was the D coordinator. They also had two other TNT alumni on that staff, offensive coordinator Quinn Gray, who's joined us, and defensive backs coach Corey Fuller. They were both on that staff. We really enjoyed talking to Ernie last time, and we're so excited that he is back with us tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. Good evening, Ernie. How have you been, my friend?
I've been good, Chris. How you doing, Chris? You and Bob, it's great to be back on the show again. Had a
Thank
good
you,
time.
Ernie. Thank you,
time.
Ernie. Great to have you.
And
so,
I got to
Ernie.
Say hello to Moose, man. I heard the last bit of conversation with Moose, and that's my man, man. We played 1 year together at Carolina. Great guy, and I'm sure you all know that from talking to him, but it was great playing with him, and they should put him in that ring of honor with it.
Yes, we got to make that happen. We're going to make a note to Jerry Richardson here. Right after this show, I promise you that we got to get him in there. It doesn't make sense to either one of us. So, Ernie, the Rattlers had a tough season last year, and you and all of our friends there on the coaching staff not there. So obviously things didn't end the way you guys wanted it to. But how'd you feel about your time as a wide receivers coach for Florida A&M?
Oh well, it was a short 2 years. It was good to be back with the guys, to be back with Kirkland and Earl Holmes and being with those guys and being in that coaching is kind of like being in the locker room, so to speak. So it was good on that atmosphere and being around them and we had a good time. Had a good time with the young men and watching them grow. We had a good nucleus of guys coming in and that we recruited the last year or two and. We're looking forward to it, but needed a little more time, didn't get it. So got to move on to the next step.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ernie, you know, I'm a big Steelers fan, right? And you guys had all the, you know, like I say, you had a couple of other former Steelers on that staff. Kellen Winslow Sr. was the athletic director there. He has since resigned. But one of the things that just didn't sit well with me, Ernie, was the timing that he let Earl go. And that was it was during homecoming week, which seems crazy to me. Who lets somebody go during homecoming week? Did it seem crazy to you guys? Did it seem maybe it was personal on some level that you would let him go during that week?
It was definitely crazy. And, you know, I know the coaching profession, you know, at any time with the record that we have, anything can happen. But normally you expect those things to happen on, if you play a game on Saturday, you get back Saturday night, you expect that thing to happen on Sunday or possibly even Monday. But this happened Tuesday around 11:30. So not only is it a short week at that point, it's homecoming, there's a lot of distractions. Now you're trying to get coaches in different positions to run a team. It just puts you in a bad spot when you make that decision late in the week, so to speak, on the first day of practice that week. And we was up against some odds, and we had some APR hits from years earlier, so we wasn't able to practice, but wasn't able to be on the field but 5 days out the week, only 16 hours for the week. So practice time. It's really tough to have a year like that and then not be able to finish it out.
So like I mentioned in your intro, Ernie, you were the wide receivers coach at Jacksonville University for several years before the couple years you were at Florida A&M. Any update on where you might be patrolling the sidelines next season?
No, nothing at the moment. Nothing at the moment. I'll tell you what I did do. That sideline was getting pretty rough for me, standing on it and going through practice. So I had knee surgery in December. Finally off the crutches about a month ago. I got off the crutches. So getting back to walking and getting a little exercise, get some of that excess laying down weight I have being on those crutches. So I'm getting a little bit of that off me now. And so I look forward to being on the sideline again. I don't know where it's going to be and when it's going to happen, but I just enjoy it. If I'm not on the sideline, I just enjoy being around football, watching football. That's who I am. I love the game. And I'm going to keep watching it. So if I don't, I guess I'm going to see some of my Gators play a little bit.
All right. Bob, question for Ernie?
See him play in a while.
And Ernie, now that you've done some coaching of wide receivers and you get to critique guys and recruit guys, et cetera, you know, Ernie, when you played, you were under 6 feet tall and you were under 200 pounds and can a guy that was your size, Ernie, make it these days, or do they just have to be much better than the competition? I mean, when you played, you've been out of the game 15 years. It seems like these guys are 4 or 5 inches taller and 20 pounds heavier now. But what makes a receiver attractive to your eyes these days?
I actually like the 6 foot, 6'1" type receivers. There's going to always be a place for the 5'11 guys like myself and 6 foot guys. I'm in somewhere in between there. But there's going to always be a spot for you. Look at the Odell Beckham and Victor Cruz. Those guys are more around my size. Andre Brown. Antonio Brown. I'm sorry, my man. Sanders out in Denver. You know, those guys are actually smaller than I was. So there's going to always be a place for it because those guys are going to always be able to run routes. And I'll tell you what they do now better than what we did. But just watching how they catch the ball. They catch the ball so fluidly now. And that comes from a lot of reps and a lot of different things that they do in time that's put in with the advancement of ball machines and more coaches each year. You look at getting more and more coaches, so these guys are able to get a lot more reps and a lot more knowledge of the game. So it's good to see the game has advanced a lot. And so I think it's always going to be a place for shorter receivers or the 5'11", 5'10", 6 foot receivers that have been around from existence, and I think it's going to always be there because of the athleticism. So that's really what I like to see when I go watch receivers, see how athletic they are. And I like the big receivers, too. They do some amazing things. But I tell you, when I saw Antonio Brown run a route, I think he was a rookie, and he ran a route. I thought that was one of the most amazing routes to see. He put his foot in the ground. It kind of reminded me of a guy, Wes Chandler. I know you guys probably remember that name, but he reminded me of Wes Chandler, where he put his foot in the ground and break out like that, and that's hard to do as a receiver, and you can be successful without doing that, but it's great to see someone do it.
And Ernie, I want to ask you about the '95 season. When you were such a good kick returner that year. I mean, you returned about 80 kicks in your career. 54 of them were in that 1 year, and you had so much success doing it. But the other 5 years, you really didn't return kicks that much. I was wondering if that was a coaching decision, your decision. That's part one. Part two, do you have to be a little crazy to do that job?
Yeah, definitely crazy. But it was a coaching decision. You got to remember, when I came into the league in 91, it was a Hall of Famer that was doing the kick returns at that time. And you all know who that is. That was Rod Woodson. So, and Rod was very successful at it. Matter of fact, my rookie year, I was one of the wing guys on kickoff return blocking for him. So I had to wait my time. In 94, I was actually playing a lot more at wide receiver. So I think it might have been Charles Johnson was returning kickoffs at that time in 94. Wilson kind of just did punt returns at that time. So, and then in 95, once I got demoted,
from the starting receiver spot at the beginning of the year. I went to Cowher and said, look, I can return kickoffs. He said, you can return kickoffs? Because I hadn't done it while he was there. And so I said, yeah, I just want to change. I got to do something. I can't, you know, just sit on the sideline and do anything. And I've covered kicks. Matter of fact, I led a team in tackles my rookie year on special teams in 91. So I like to be on the field. I have to be on the field. I can't be a guy to just stand over there on that sideline. And so I took ownership in it. And Bobby April is a great special teams coach. He's still doing it, and he's been successful since before he came to Pittsburgh. And he trusted me with it and allowed me to do a lot of things. Matter of fact, LeVon Kirkland was the center on that kickoff return, one of the blockers up there. So I had a lot of fun with it. Kirkland's a lot of fun, you know, with that unit, and he was the captain of that unit. So we had a lot of fun with that time. Fred McAvee was on there at that time. So, you know, we had a lot of great guys on that kickoff return. I had a lot of fun, and I didn't get one for a touchdown, which would have really boosted my average up. But I had a lot of 30 and 40 yard kickoff returns, and really tried to change the field position every time I got my hands on it. And as far as crazy, I ran into Avoy Mays. He used to play the Redskins, played with Pittsburgh. He was
right.
He described me. He said he thought I was loco. I said, "What do you mean loco?" He said, "And the way you would return that kickoff, man, you got to be crazy to run up in there like that." So you do have to be a little crazy to run those kickoff returns. And I like seeing these guys do it today. They do a great job with it.
Yeah.
And that guy there from Baltimore is really good too.
Jacoby.
Ernie, a couple more before we let you go. We've got our next guest, John Randall, hanging on the line. We're going to get to John in just a minute. But, Ernie, as you know, I'm a big Steeler fan. And as hard as I've celebrated the Super Bowl wins, as equally as hard as I've taken the two losses in particular, Bob mentioned, the 95 season, I still haven't gotten over Super Bowl 30. Have you?
No, I don't think I ever will. I know anyone who ever gets to that game never gets over it. It's amazing. It's a great experience, a heck of an experience to even make it there. But it's one you never forget. You never forget that one that you let get away. I know those guys are playing for the Seahawks are never going to forget this game, regardless of how close it was. It's still when you a month and years away from that game, it's still a loss, and it never gets easy.
So, Ernie, can you help me get a little closure? Was Corey Holiday supposed to be there as the hot read, or are you still scratching your head wondering what the heck Neil was thinking?
No, it's a combination on that last one. Corey Holiday did what he's supposed to do. He runs a go route, and we have the option to hook up or break out on that route. It's a hot route. They blitz from that side. And Andre hooked up. He turned outside, but he hooked up. And Neil thought when he turned outside, he was going to keep running outside. So he threw it. We were expecting him to break outside. So Corey had nothing to do with it. I know it looks crazy. Everybody thinks it was Corey, but Corey wasn't involved in it. You just had to take off, go, run off. And on hot situations, we never do it to the outside guy. We always do it to the inside guy. It was just one of those things. It's unfortunate because of the way it looks. But it's just one of them things where you try to make adjustments to the defenses and the way you run routes and throw passes. Anticipation is such a big part of the game. But it's unfortunate from the offense side of things and the way we played that game, especially from the second quarter on, and then losing that way.
Right. Well, Ernie, before we let you go, how can our listeners follow you online and over social media?
Well, you can always – I'm always on Facebook, and I do have a Twitter. I don't follow it as much, but I talk to everyone who sent me a message on Facebook, and it's Ernie Mills. And anytime, and that's I enjoy it. I got a lot of family on there. See a lot of pictures and things. I'm start posting a little more that I got time. I'm not coaching as much, so it'll be fun. and share a few more stories with people.
There you go. Well, Ernie, thank you so much for taking time out of your night to come back on the show. You're always fantastic, and, you know, I got 1,000 other questions I'd love to ask. I'm sure Bob does as well. So
yeah.
We hope you'll come back and join us again real soon.
Hey, Chris and Bob, thank y'all for having me. It's always fun. It's good to talk about the guys of the day as well as some of the things from the past. And I know it's always fun being on the – I know your next guest, John Randall, was always fun playing against Minnesota, and he was so vibrant and definitely did a lot of trash talking, which is what I like to hear when I play. So being in the offense, especially since I didn't have to go against him, so it was easy for me to laugh at what he was saying.
That's great stuff. All right, Ernie, take care. We look forward to catching up with you again, hopefully really soon.
You feel all better, right, Ernie.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Bob.
Take care.
All right, take care, Ernie. Yeah, I got 1,000 questions, Bob, as you could imagine, to ask a guy like Ernie Mills for the amount of time he spent not only in Pittsburgh, but like Moose said, he spent a year there in Carolina, a couple in Dallas, which is always interesting to me what it's like to be on the opposite side when you've got a couple of teams that were big rivals. You know, you spend time with both sides and wonder what that's like. So hopefully we get the opportunity to chat again with Ernie real soon.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, Chris, because he played with and against some great players. And although his career might have been semi-short, he's a very good player. You remember him well. And, man, he could run back kicks that 95 year. I'll still remember it, man. He had a lot of 30 and 40 yards and put them in a good position to win.
Absolutely right. All right, we've got our next guest hanging on the line now. Joining us on the Kyven Foods guest line is Minnesota Vikings Hall of Fame defensive tackle John Randall. John joined us a few weeks ago as David Meltzer's guest on our 12th man segment, and we had the pleasure of meeting John at Warren Moon's Hall of Fame reception last month. Let me give you a little more background on John. He's from Bumford, Texas, which is, like he said in his Hall of Fame induction speech, has a population of about 150, so small town. Played his college ball starting at Trinity Valley Community College and later transferred to Texas A&I. And if you can believe it, he was an undrafted free agent signed by the Vikings in 1990. Played in the league from 1990 to 2003 with the Vikings and Seahawks. He had more sacks than anyone in the league from 1991 to 2002. Was named to the Pro Bowl 7 times. Also named to the All-Decade Team for the 1990s. 7th all-time on the sacks list with 137.5. And as you all know, inducted to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2010. And we are honored to have him back with us for a full segment tonight on Thursday Night Tailgate. John, Chris Mascaro, and Bob Lazzari, thanks for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me on.
Thank you, John.
John, as I mentioned, small town in Texas you grew up in. No indoor running water, no indoor plumbing. Talk about what it was like for you growing up, for you and your family, in such a small town.
to me, it was normal. As a kid, I thought everyone basically grew up the same way I did. I thought everybody went outside to a well, turned it on, put a bucket underneath, took that water, brought that water inside, put it on the stove, heated it up, and put it in a metal tub. But for me, I mean, I just thought it was normal until I got older and, when I went to school, junior high, I saw how things were so different. We chopped wood for my uncle, who had a wood-burning heater. And so we had a little small, propane tank outside. So we had a small heater. It was, when I got to high school, let's just say everything changed for me. Went to a town of about 4,000 people called Hearn, Texas. And I just kind of started realizing that the way I grew up wasn't so normal. It was just, I kind of think the way we grew up was kind of like the Beverly Hillbilly. my brother would go out and shoot rabbits, and we would eat rabbits. We would go out and fish, catch fish, and eat the fish. To me, it was normal. And, what can I say? I just thought it was normal.
So... So, John, I mean, you know, thinking about the whole journey of your life, from where you started to about the time you're, you know, on the podium in Canton, you know, as you did you have time to sort of reflect? You know, your brothers were there with you. Did you have an opportunity to sit back and say, you know what, boy, you know, I went from this to this. Holy smokes.
You know what, I didn't reflect on it because I was so nervous about giving my speech, because I wanted to talk about 20 to 25 minutes, but Deacon Jones, God rest his soul, at the time came up to me and told me, "Yo, listen, you've got 5 minutes, and in that 5 minutes, you better say everything that you want to say, because after that 5 minutes, I will get up there and pull you down." So, but I really didn't have that much time.
And you did. You came in under 5 minutes. I watched your speech. It was like 4.5.
Yeah, he was serious. He told us he told me I was at the hotel, and he came. I was getting off the elevator. He came on the elevator. He goes, "John Randy, you got 5 minutes, and only 5 minutes to say what you need to say." And so, but, you know, I didn't really reflect on it until I got back home from Canton, Ohio, when my brother and I got together away from everybody and just kind of sat back. We were talking about it, you know, how hard it was for us growing up. I mean, my mom basically raised us on $23 a week.
Wow.
We grew up, and it was like a basically like three-room house. And then we had an outdoor bathroom, which was, in the wintertime, you froze going out there, and sometimes you sweated just because it was just hot. And Central Texas, you would go in there sometimes, and you would see snakes in there. Yeah, sometimes you go in there, see the snakes, you would go back inside the house and just hold it until the next morning.
Wow.
It was difficult. Yeah, it was difficult at times. I mean, if we had a power outage, sometimes we would lose power for 2 or 3 days. I tell you, one of the funniest things was when I got to college. Some of my teammates and I, we went to a McDonald's. And so walking into McDonald's, and I ordered, I think I was second or third, got up there, and the girl asked me, she goes, "Will you please, you know, make your order?" And I'm going, hold on. She goes, "Doc, I can't believe you're taking so long." And she said, "You're acting like this is your first time." And I said, it is my first time at a McDonald's. Because I had never been to a McDonald's. I've seen the commercials, you know, but to go in there and all of a sudden there's all this, you know, everything's up there. I'm like, you know, trying to figure out what I want to eat. And but I was wow. I was just so overwhelmed.
Right. John, your hometown is sort of right in the heart of a triangle that sort of forms between San Antonio, Dallas, and Houston. So growing up, were you an Oilers fan? Were you a Cowboys fan? Who'd you root for?
Oh, my God. I was a Cowboys fan and a Pittsburgh Steelers fan.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you've got, from the Cowboys, you got Randy White, Ed Too Tall Jones. Then from the Steelers, I've got Mean Joe Green, you know, and I'm just like looking at Franco Harris, Mel Blount, Rocky Blyer. I'm like, oh, my God. I was just, every year, I, you know, am I going to wear a number 75 or am I going to wear a number 54? So, huge football fan. You know, we get out in the backyard on Sundays after the game, and sit out there and you know, imagine ourselves being one of those NFL stars. So, you know, for me, those two teams were like, you know, at the time in the 80s, back 70s and 80s, man, those were the teams, Cowboys and the Steelers, you know. Who didn't want to be Terry Bradshaw or Roger Staubach, or, you know, so for me, I love this team.
There you go. That's what I like to hear. Bob, questions for John?
And John, anytime I talk to a Hall of Famer, I'd always like to pick their brain about their early influences. You said your mom raised you, and it was a pretty tough upbringing. But maybe can you mention to us who are some of like your early athletic influences as far as early coaches and guys that set you on the right path?
You know what? For me, oh, my God, my brother who played in the National Football League before me, he was my main idol. He played at Baylor University, and I actually went to go see my brother play at Baylor and watched Eric Dickerson play my brother at Baylor. And that's the first time I saw Eric Dickerson. So I'm seeing Eric Dickerson, I'm seeing my brother, but my brother was a huge influence because, you know, he's my big brother, and, you know, every little brother always wants to try to keep up with his big brother. But my brother Irvin was my biggest, say, I looked up to him, and I ran track a little bit, or we went outside to run. I wanted to be Prefontaine. I wanted to be that guy. It was sad when my coach told me that I would never be Prefontaine, but I looked up to my brother. It was just those two guys. But for me, I mean, I got to high school, I wanted to play, my brother played running back, I wanted to play running back, and I remember the first time I got to play organized football was in the ninth grade, and I told the coach I wanted to be a running back. The coach looked at me and told me, you get your big butt over there with O-line and D-line. And so from that point on, I was a defensive lineman and O-lineman. But my brother who played at Tampa for 9 years, when my first year in the league, before I got in the league, I was a free agent. So I went down to Tampa for a workout. I went down there, and they looked at me, and they told me that they wanted to sign me to a practice squad and let me mature as a linebacker. But I told them no. I told them I wanted to be a defensive lineman, and that that I was appreciative of their offer, but I was going to go elsewhere. And that's, I transitioned from Tampa, sunny and nice, hot, warm weather, to Minnesota, where it's freezing and it's cold, and one of the biggest decisions in my life.
And in Minnesota, John, the 11 years there, I mean, the stats you put up were amazing. You played with some great teams. But, you know, you're inside that Metro Dome. And we've heard nightmare stories, especially from baseball players, John, who just did not like playing in there. How was it for a football player? Was it just a job to do for you, or would you have rather been playing outside somewhere?
You know what? For me, it goes back to my mom, who was – the biggest influence on me, because as a kid, my mom grew up chopping cotton. I grew up chopping cotton for $2 an hour. And my mom always told me, when you take a job, finish it. No matter how tough it is, if you accept that job, you got to do it. So for me, when I first got to Minnesota, I said I just wanted to make the team. But after my second year, and I wanted to start, and then by my third and fourth year, I said this was my home, and the Metrodome was my home field. And for me, it was kind of like I have that part of Texas where if you're competing, it doesn't matter where you compete at. You can compete in a mud field. You can compete in the woods. You can compete on the road, on the street, whatever, you're going to compete. So for me, the Metrodome was my home, and that's what it was. And so I competed to my best at the Metrodome. But for me, I like playing in other people's stadiums, because as we say in Texas, it's nothing like kicking somebody's butt, but there's nothing like kicking somebody's butt in their own backyard.
Yeah. John, as we said, you know, throughout this, you went undrafted. Did you play your career with a bit of a chip on your shoulder because no one drafted you?
Of course, yeah, I did. I was undrafted. I was undersized. I'm only 6'1" and a half. Everybody jokes about. And so, when I walked on the field every year with the defensive lineman, that was here in Minnesota, or when I was in Seattle, I was always the shortest defensive lineman. And for my first year, I was playing against Jackie Slater, and these words stuck in my head through my whole career. Jackie said to me, he goes, he's looking around, he goes, I want you, because you're the smallest guy. And I always said to myself, I'm the smallest guy. So when I walked on the field, I wanted to be the guy for you to say, you know what, he was the smallest guy, and he was also the wrong guy for us to kick on. And that's where I approached practice. That's where I approached the game. So after the game, I want the offensive lineman to look at me and go, yeah, next time we're not going to mess with the small guy. We'd rather go after one of the bigger guys. So that was just part of my makeup.
You sacked Brett Favre more than any other quarterback, which makes sense because you guys played so long in the same division. But he said you were the toughest defensive player that he ever faced, and on artificial turf, you were virtually unblockable. What was your relationship like with Brett?
It was a good relationship where we both competed against each other, talked smack, but at the same time, it was handshakes afterwards. For me personally, for the state of Minnesota, I represented Minnesota. He represented Wisconsin. And for us in Minnesota, during the football season, you know, our Packer fans would put their flags on the cars, and you knew it was Packer week. Well, at some point during my career here in Minnesota, the Packer fans, they kept their flags up year-round. They just didn't care. It was like every week they were like playing. It was like they were playing Minnesota. It was like they wanted to just really emphasize, hey, we are Packer fans. And so for me and my fellow Vikings fans, we looked at it as a special when we played Green Bay, that we wanted to win those games, because since our states are side by side, that we really wanted to win that game, because I always said during the holiday time, I knew that some family that was full of Packer fans and Vikings fans, that they would always, on the holiday time of the year, get together and argue about which team is better. And I wanted the Vikings fans to feel as if they had the upper hand by us winning the game.
That's great. One more, John, before we let you go. Most of our conversation when we were together at, you know, Warren Moon's event centered around golf with you and our friend Vince Glenn. How's your golf game coming?
It's coming out pretty well. I'm a hacker, but I just love the game of golf because it allows you to compete with receivers, ex-receivers, ex-defensive linemen, ex-offensive linemen, running back, you know, DB like Vince. So it's a game that allows me to compete. And I don't need 11 guys. I can just do it myself. And I just enjoy the game so much that it's getting out there on the golf course, walking it, just hitting that golf ball. And, you know, and your golf game depends on the day-to-day, I mean, the weekly play. One week I play well, the next week I play bad. And I get the opportunity to play with some great PGA player golfers, some great amateurs who are out there who are scratch golfers. And, you know, you just never know who you're going to play with. And I just love playing a game in the different parts of the country. And also it gives me an opportunity to help raise money for different charities. And, you know, my way of giving back to so many fans out there who's given me so much with my life. And, you know, this charity golf from doing prostate cancer to breast cancer to the Wounded Warriors Fund, I had the opportunity to meet so many people, different walks of life. But, you know, for me, golf is it's my next phase of life, and I'm enjoying it. And I'm hoping one day that I get a chance to play year-round like most of you guys do to elevate my game.
One of the things that I thought was interesting that I read about you, John, is when you're playing someone in golf, one of the things, you know, they may be beating you, and then they hit a bad shot, and they get frustrated with the bad shot, and then you look at them and say, ah, you know what you just did there? You opened the door for me. So it's like the psychological piece. You're putting the psychological piece back to work on the golf course now, too, huh?
Yeah, because it's that, you know, I've said that to so many people because a buddy of mine who's a heck of a golfer, we were playing one day, and I hit a bad shot. I was up like six strokes, and I hit a bad shot, and he goes, you hear that sound? I go, what sound? He goes, just like the sound of that door just opening up, buddy, just opening up. And so from that point on, I was like, okay, you know what? Golf is a game that you can talk a little trash and still have fun at it. And, you know, it's just my brother actually got me to start playing golf. And my first time playing golf was one of those days where I felt that I was blind, or if I was dizzy. I'm like, the ball is just sitting right there, and all I got to do is just take this club and just hit this ball. Just hit it. You know, you stand there, you're trying to hit the ball, and I'm like, the ball's not moving, and I couldn't hit it. But my brother used to play better than me, and I started practicing and, you know, made the most out of it. And I beat him on any given day. I can beat him. But, you know, for me, like I said, golf is just it's a great game. I'm sad I didn't take it up until after I retired. But, man, it's a great game.
There you go. John, how can our listeners follow you online or over social media?
You know, I'm a pretty private person. I'm thinking about doing Twitter. I'm not really sure yet, but I'm a pretty private person. And I think most people can't follow me, but if I'm usually with somebody else who's probably doing some Twitter. A lot of my buddies have it, but for me right now, I'm still just a private guy. I mean, heck, I'm from a town of 150 people, and if you had told me when I was 10 years old or 15 years old that I would be in the Hall of Fame living in Minnesota, I would have laughed that off because to me, I feel as if I'm living a dream, and there's an alarm clock somewhere that's ticking, and I hope that alarm clock never goes off because, man, this is one heck of a dream that I'm living. The things I've done, the opportunities in my life, and dude, this is awesome for a country boy. This is truly awesome.
John, and you're awesome. It's been so great having you as part of the show tonight. Thank you for taking time out of your night to join us. We hope you'll come back and do it again sometime because the stories you tell and having you part of the show has been just that awesome.
Well, thank you guys for having me on.
It's our pleasure, John. Hit him straight.
All right, John. Thank you very much. Yeah, hit him straight, my friend. We'll catch up with you hopefully real soon.
All right.
Good night.
Take care, John. All the best to you and your family.
All right. Good night.
Great stuff, Bob. I tell you what, all the trash talk that John did on the gridiron, boy, you know, you got to wonder what the trash talk has got to be like on the fourth, fifth, or 17th hole.
I don't want to get John Randall mad at me if he has a golf club in his hand, Chris.
That's a good call.
But, you know, it's one thing, and we could talk about guys like Ali and guys like that. It's one thing to trash talk, but to back it up, Chris, and Randall did that, man. The stats are incredible, and, you know, next time we get to speak with him, we can talk to him about his longevity because he never missed games like Bob Lilly. And among the all-time greats, I'm just speechless speaking with him. It was an honor.
Absolutely right. All right, before we get to our next guest, Lee Steinberg, I want to give a quick shout-out to our good friend Renee Schull at Integrated Ply. If you're either already in job transition or you want to be in job transition, go to integratedply.org online and see what Renee can do to help you We all want to do business and take advice from someone that we trust and who has our best interests at heart. Well, you're not going to find somebody who fits that bill any better than Renee Schell at Integrated Play. Like you hear me say every week, she's smart, she's talented, and the kind of person you want to work with and have working for you. She's doing great things, way above and beyond things for some of our guests who are in transition from being pro athletes and now are getting into the job market. I'm telling you, folks, she's just the very best. There isn't another way to describe Renee. If you work with her for 2 minutes, you're going to understand why we say that every single week on this show. If you're an athlete or anybody in the job market, do yourself a favor and reach out to Renee. You're going to be very glad you did. Go to integratedplay.org online and give her a follow on Twitter at integratedplay. All right, now back with us on the Kyven Foods guest line is our friend and a guy we have, you know, a ton of respect for, and that's Lee Steinberg. Lee's book, The Agent, My 40-Year Career Making Deals and Changing the Game, is a New York Times bestseller. He also hosts his own show on Yahoo Sports Radio called Behind Closed Doors that airs on Monday nights starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. He is one of the busiest and most sought-after people on the planet. His schedule is absolutely crazy, which is one of the reasons why it's always such a privilege for us to say that he's now joining us on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Lee, how you doing?
My privilege to be with the greatest host in the world. I'm not quitting my day job. I don't want to compete with you guys.
I appreciate that, Lee.
Chris and Bob, the duo.
Thank you, sir.
So, Lee, your client, Garrett Gilbert, was a rookie quarterback out of SMU, drafted in the sixth round last year by the Rams, was signed to their practice squad, released in late October, but signed with the Patriots in mid-December, sort of just in time for their Super Bowl run. What was it like being, you know, with Garrett and, you know, on, you know, having him now on the Patriots practice squad, and then over the last week, you know, last 6 weeks of the season, seeing the journey that the Patriots made all the way to the Super Bowl?
Well, you know, we had three choices that same week, and the two other teams were teams that were not going to play in the playoffs. So I don't think it was real hard to decide that Garrett might benefit from sitting in the same meeting room every day with Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and play an extra 6 weeks. And so it was exciting. Now, I've had quarterbacks in the Super Bowl for years and years and years. Some of them didn't do so well. Tony Eason was on the other side of the Chicago Bear blowout. Drew Bledsoe lost his. Ben Roethlisberger won his. But then between Troy and Steve, they were the quarterbacks of the winning Super Bowl team for four straight years. So it's always exciting. That is the convention of Americana, and this is what players aspire to experience for their entire career.
Yeah, and now he signed there, right, through the 2015 season. So what are your expectations for him, and what's his expectation for his role next season?
What became difficult this year is the fact that where 5 years ago teams kept three and even four quarterbacks, 15 of the 32 teams only kept two quarterbacks on their roster, which I don't understand, because quarterback one goes down, quarterback two is now playing, and the new quarterback is someone that hasn't even been through training camp. Last year they kept two, but they've assured us that it's just a matter of how the roster breaks out, four or three. And the best chance for him, he throws a beautiful ball. He's very quick in the classroom to understand. They liked what they saw, and I think that's the best situation for him. And it's also, I'm really close with Bob Kraft. Obviously, notwithstanding Deflategate, they are as good an organization as you will find in professional sports.
Well, you've written a string of articles for Forbes magazine, and one of the ones that I read recently was titled "Don't Want to Deal with the Press? Play on a Sandlot," which is obviously aimed at Marshawn Lynch and potentially Kevin Durant for their lack of desire to talk with the media, both at the Super Bowl and the NBA All-Star game. In the article, you say they don't understand the critical role that the press plays in the health of professional sports. What don't they understand?
what they don't understand is the reason that professional sports are so popular is that in addition to the games being shown on television, people every single day read articles about the sport, they watch television shows, they read blogs, they listen to talk radio. And were it not for that entire journalistic presence, the games would be one-tenth as popular as they are. So if they have to understand that they are in an entertainment business, it's not bread and butter on the table. It's not a way to drive to work to like professional sports. It's a discretionary entertainment spending habit, which we all have to be involved in helping ensure goes on. So if you want fans to go to games, watch them on TV, play fantasy sports, buy memorabilia, being cooperative with the press is part and parcel. If you don't want to do any of those things, I think you can be a purist and go play in the sandlot, and no one will criticize you. You won't have to answer any questions. You won't be paid anything. But you can it's in the contract. They agreed to do it. And I just think the players make a mistake when they view the press as hostile. Most of the people that cover professional sports who are beat writers need to have an ongoing relationship. They're not looking to play gotcha with an athlete. They can go off the record at times. So without this coverage, we wouldn't have the largesse that comes to everyone involved in the sport.
Bob, questions for Lee?
And Lee, it's always a pleasure. I was thinking of you today, Lee, because I was picking up a newspaper, reading the New York papers, and I know this is a football show, but everything in the sports section today was about Alex Rodriguez and his handwritten apology to the New York fans through the Yankee offices and everything. And I'm saying to myself, I'm just wondering how somebody like Lee would handle this. You know, since you've counseled so many athletes in the past, I mean, it seems like he's just digging a bigger hole for himself. And, you know, it's to the point up here, Lee, where the fans have had it. The team probably has had it. Is he in a position where he just can't win no matter what he does? Or should he just, if you were counseling him, should he just get on the field and just start playing some baseball?
Well, he should. So if you go back a number of different years, he had a rough time ever being accepted because the New York fans couldn't see him through all the talk about money. I mean, there was so much discussion of this massive contract he got, and he really wanted to be loved. He wanted to be like Derek Jeter, but was never accepted that way. Look, if someone's using steroids and is clearly using them, and a client came to me, and he would have been so much better off if very early on he had said, I made a mistake, I shouldn't have used these, just come out. Instead, he went through this massive amount of legal and other situations to prove he didn't use steroids over and over and over again. And so if you look at the players who've admitted that they use steroids, baseball players, really not much has happened to them. And they've at least been applauded for their honesty. It's the ones who have fought to the bitter end to deny it who have had the problems. And here you have someone who's so massively compensated in relation to what he's doing on the field right now that had he done a humble and sincere apology early, it would have all been past him. But as it is, this is a combination of someone who's paid at the top of the game, whose performance has been somewhat mediocre, and is now stained by this scandal.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. And each time I speak with you, Lee, I always like to bring up at least one of your esteemed clients. The list is ridiculous. I'm looking at it now, and I'll just pick a name. How about like a Howie Long? Here's a guy, I remember following him at Villanova. Lee, did you have any idea of this guy when you first were made aware of him that he would become well, not only a great football player, but a pretty polished broadcaster and actor. I mean, this guy's a very talented man.
I actually took him later in his career, and he was already accomplished on the field. I had the first round pick the year he came in was Kurt Marsh, who was my client, and Howie was a second round draft pick. So I knew him from when he was a rookie. When he came to me, I knew there was not a funnier person that I'd ever met as a player. He is so hilarious in the way he tells the story, in his observations on the world. And what happened is that when he went down and they became the LA Raiders, even though they had all the other players on the team, he was the one that everyone went to for quote. He was the one whose name was in there all the time, and his takes on things are just hilarious. You could fall down laughing. So as his career started to end, I took him over to a big entertainment agency, and it was really clear to me that he could do movies. He quit his movie career, and maybe they weren't the Academy Award winners, but he was just coming on, but he decided he didn't want to live that lifestyle, and he was off the streets in a sense, but he could also be very polished, and he's exceptionally bright, so and exceptionally analytical. There are players who just play the game, and then there are players who can talk about the game. It reminds me of when Troy Aikman went on to Fox, and some people said, well, you know, he's a little vanilla, he's too on all the rest of it. And I knew that Troy was masking part of his own personality to try to keep things on an even keel in the maelstrom, in the insanity that often was surrounding the Dallas Cowboys. So he didn't make the quote that could be controversial. He didn't do any of that. But in private, he's very funny and very, very smart and analytical. So I knew he'd be fine.
Lee, one of the topics that we address frequently on this show is bullying. You have a friend, Jordan Roberts, who produced a film called White Rabbit, and the plot centers around the issue of bullying and the traumatic effects that it can have. You spoke at the premiere of the film. Do you mind talking about the film and the message you shared?
The trauma that's visited on all sorts of kids in junior high and high school stays with them for life. They can be physically bullied and emotionally bullied in a way where it destroys their self-esteem. And in the worst situations, these kids strike back and become Columbine shooters and do hideous things. So this is a real problem. Why sports factors into it is this, because in the hierarchy of what goes on at a high school, the jocks, the athletes, are on the top of the social chain in almost every single school. I mean, they are the admired people. They're cool. So if they're the bulliers, it sends a horrible message. If they stand up against bullying, instead talk about tolerance, then they can make a real difference. And I've spoken to the CIF out here in California, coaches and players about this. Those coaches and players could set the standard, because if they do something, then it will translate down. So the White Rabbit's a very compelling, but a very tough, sad movie, not exactly a big upper. But I think that this bullying that goes on all the time is something that I'm pledged to try to roll back, because there are people walking all around this society as adults that never get all the joy out of life because they look at it through a skewered prism that started when they were picked on because they looked a little different or talked a little different or weren't cool or couldn't defend themselves and a lot of them don't recover ever.
Wow. Lee, talk about your show, Behind Closed Doors. Are you enjoying being on the other side of the mic?
You know, it's the third time that I've had a radio show. I had one on a talk radio show on KCBS up in San Francisco for a couple of years. had to cancel it because of family stuff. Then they had one on the Mighty 1090 in Southern California. And it's an opportunity to take fans behind the scenes of many of the stories that go on and look at them in a slightly different way. And then we have guests. So we've had retired athletes like Earl Campbell and Daryl Johnson and Troy Aikman and owners like Art Rooney and GMs like Stephen Jones or Howie Roseman and good writers and college coaches. So we try to stay topical with what's happening. And it was a glorious NFL season with all sorts of issues and interesting things to talk through. So it's my opportunity really to sort of free flow express myself and then interview guests and try to hear from them.
So tell our listeners how they can find your show online and then how they can follow you over social media.
So I tweet at Lee Steinberg, and we have a website. Also, the show is Yahoo Sports Radio. So it's on live in many different markets, and in others it isn't. And if it's not, you go to yahoosportsradio.com/listen, and you can hear it. But the only thing we don't get a lot of is calls, and I think it's because the guests take up so much of the show. But I think it's interesting. The other thing it does is it keeps me in touch with where fans are, where the support for the sport comes from, and what the attitudes are, so that you never get removed from the actual economic basis of the whole business we're in, which is fans being interested. And I get to talk about the role modeling and charitable and community programs that our clients do and give people a sense of hope that in reality athletes are not behaving worse. The media is more heavy, and we're
right.
So much more aware of it. But actually, athletes, when it comes to issues like alcohol and domestic abuse, are much less prone to do something wrong than they were 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely right. Thank you for pointing that out. That's something that we try to make sure that we're pointing out on this show every week as well. Lee, thank you so much for taking time out of your night. Like I said in your intro, I think you have got to be the busiest man in all of sports and entertainment, because you're everywhere. And how you keep track of your schedule, or the person that does, God bless them, because you're everywhere. And we thank you for taking a few minutes to be a part of this show.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I'll always have time for the Thursday show.
Well, I appreciate you. Thank you very much. We hope you'll come back, soon and update us on all the things that you're working on. And in between now and then, all the best to you and your family. We can't thank you enough for being a part of the show with us tonight.
Well, it's an honor to be part of the tailgate.
Thank you very much, Lee. All right,
bye-bye.
Take care. We'll catch up soon. All right. Lee Steinberg, always one of our favorite guests on the show. We've got our next guest, Devon McDonald, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Devon on the other side of this message from our friends over at Kyven Foods and then at Coastal Orthopedics.
This is Reggie Kelly, former Cincinnati Bengals and Atlanta Falcon tight end, and I'm the owner of Kyven Foods. And if you enjoy delicious food, you're going to love my Kyven products, which consist of our honey apple salsa, sweet barbecue sauce, and an array of seasonings. For store locations, online orders, and recipes, check out our website at www.kyven82.com. That's KYVAN82.com. One taste, and you'll appreciate the goodness.
Are you suffering from chronic pain in your shoulders, hips, knees, or wrists? Tired of living life with an old injury that just won't go away? If you answered yes to either of these questions, we can help. At Coastal Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, Dr. Candelora and his fine staff of medical professionals will get you back on the road to recovery. Their state-of-the-art facility and attention to detail will ensure you will be enjoying life again and feeling invincible in no time. Since 1991, Dr. Candelora and Coastal Orthopedics have been specializing in joint replacement, arthritis, and osteoporosis care, as well as pediatric and adult general orthopedics. Visit us on the web, www.bone-dr.com, or call our Newport Richey office just north of Tampa at 727-848-1417. Proud sponsors of Mike Ditka's The Gridiron Greats Assistance Fund.
Hey, hey, welcome back. This is Todd Washington, two-time Super Bowl champ, offensive line coach for the Baltimore Ravens, and you are listening to Thursday Night Tailgate with my boys Chris Moscato and Bob Lazzari on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Go get them, guys.
Now back with us on the Kyven Foods guest line is Devon McDonald. This is Devon's third visit with us, so let me remind you a little bit about his background. He was born in Kingston, Jamaica. He was a fourth-round draft pick in 1993 by the Indianapolis Colts out of Notre Dame. He played in the NFL from 1993 to 2002 for the Colts and Cardinals and in the Arena League for the Tampa Bay Storm. He's been a wonderful supporter of the show, which we can't thank him enough for being. We're glad to have him back with us tonight as a part of Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Devon, thanks for coming back and being a part of the show.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good to have you back.
As a former member of the Colts and a guy who still lives there, are you excited about what you saw from the Colts last season or disappointed with the way things ended there against New England?
I was disappointed. I really felt like luck was going to turn that corner, you know what I mean? He's going to come to this point where, because he's such a gritty guy. I mean, he's a tough guy. I love tough quarterbacks. I mean, I play with Jim Harbaugh. And I love those type of players. I mean, you don't have to be the Peyton Manning type, you know, just so technical. I just like a guy just go get it done. I don't care how it's getting, like Tim Tebow. It's just go get it done. Just go win, you know what I mean? And so
yeah.
I'm that type of player, and so I kind of gravitate to those type of guys. I just go get it done. So, I mean, yeah, to answer your question, man, I was definitely disappointed.
Do you guys have, you know, in the downstream, any reservations about Deflategate, or like Dwayne Allen said, you know, the Patriots would have won that game even if they had used a wet bar of soap and stuff?
Yeah, I thought that was funny, man. Yeah, I mean, they were just the most dominant team. I mean, you know, it might have been worse with some regular football, you know what I mean? So, I mean, a few points that we did get, maybe because, you know, our balls might have been reflected from their ball. Who knows, man? But when it comes down to it, we just got beat up, you know. And sometimes, though, you know, there was no discussion whether we might have could have won that game. We got beat
right.
up bad. And I think sometimes a good whooping is good, you know what I mean? Because you go back now, when you're working out, you can't say what could have, should have, would have. We did.
Yeah,
let's
yeah.
go get it now. So, you know what I mean? It motivates you more because of that embarrassment. You never want that to happen again, you know?
The Seahawks defense, we all know, number one overall in just about every category,
yeah.
particularly in
yeah.
fewest
yeah.
yards allowed passing, fewest yards allowed rushing, fewest points per game on average. Yet Tom Brady, with the exception of the two interceptions, torched them for nearly twice as many yards as they normally allowed, twice as many
mm-hmm,
points
mm-hmm,
as they allowed
mm-hmm,
during the season.
Mm-hmm.
Were you surprised to see Brady have as much success as
no,
he did against
no,
Seattle?
No,
or?
No. Now, listen, I tell people this. You do not win in the playoff on the championship without running the ball. What people fail to see is this. How they beat the Colts, right? They didn't really run the football, did they?
No.
No, but they did. It's called yak yards, yards after catch. So whether
yeah.
I hand you the ball and you run it, or I throw it and you run it, look what Gronk did. You know, Edelman. I mean, they ran after they caught the ball. So regardless, you have to run the football. And that's why they won that game against the Colts. And that's why they beat Seattle. They ran the ball, but they didn't have a good sound running game, people would say. No, look at the yak
right.
yard. Look at the yards after catches. So ultimately, you're controlling the game. You're controlling the ball. You're keeping their offense off the field. So it's genius, man. You know, it's genius. You would think you would need a top running back to win the Super Bowl. No, you don't. You just need to be able to run the football. So whether you run it after a catch or a handoff, who cares? You got to run the football.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what New England did, man. They ran the ball.
Devon, let me take you back to your time in college, part of Notre Dame's last national championship team back in 1988. I'm sure you root for the Irish to win every week.
Yeah.
Was there a part of you that's proud to say that you were part of the last national championship team at Notre Dame?
You know what? Yes, but sadly, yes. You know what I mean? When we won the championship, in my mind, you know what? Wow, we're going to do this again and again and again. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
yeah. It's just natural to think, you know what? Man, that was, you know, it was tough, but we did it. We can do it again. You know what I mean? And then the next year, we were 11-0 going down to the Orange Bowl against Miami in that playing in the actual Orange Bowl, not the bowl game. And
yeah, yeah.
We got beat by them, and you know, we all still argue that we win. You know, we did win our second national championship because we beat number one Colorado, number two Miami, then beat number four I think Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. And so, if you beat number one, you should be number one. But to answer your question, man, years later now, it's disappointing. I was down there in South Beach when we got embarrassed against Miami. I mean, against Alabama, it was just unbelievable. So, we have a good recruiting class, but it's tough to watch, man. Now we have a quarterback, somewhat of a controversy. You know, if Golson stays,
right.
I mean. You know, it's tough to watch it these days.
Bob, questions for Devon?
And Devon, many people don't realize that you had a twin brother, Ricardo, who had a full NFL career. And, you know, I was doing a little research before, Devon, as far as it's amazing that both of you were drafted in the fourth round.
I know.
Careers. Similar size, everything, of course, being twins. But I just was wondering, I mean, was it incredibly competitive between the two of you growing up, or was it you just had each other's back and wanted to go as far as you could?
Well, I tell you what, I mean, when we came from Jamaica, right, a coach said, okay, if you want to be great, remember this. You got to hit somebody on every play. Then he said, if you don't know what to do, just hit somebody. So it's just amazing how we took those simple things. And so a lot of guys who grew up in America, and you know, they didn't listen to that. But we listened to that. So every play, I try to hit somebody. And a lot of times, and one thing Lou Holtz would say, man, that Devon McDonald, you know, talk with his lips, that Devon McDonald, he just go all out, you know, he just go all out. Yeah, because... Hey, if I'm going to make it, I'm going to make it full speed. You know what I mean? And I can't tell you how many times I pick up fumbles just running to the ball. You know what I mean? Just being around, going as hard as you can. You know, so, but we were definitely competitive, man. I mean, it's hard to say you're a twin. I look at Tiki and Rondé Barber because we're one of only 10 twins ever to play in the NFL. We're the only twins from Jamaica to play in the NFL, you know? So, yeah, I mean, you're definitely competitive. We compete on, I mean, you name it, man, the way we dress, the way we walk, the way, I mean, just hyper. And, you know, now I'm a speaker in my ministry. And so when I get with him and we have to talk, if I talk first, I can see him, his wheels are turning, like, I got to outdo my brother. You know what I mean? So even today, you know, the competitive juice still flow, man.
And I wanted to bring that up, Devon, about your work speaking to students, your ministry work, and obviously your time at Notre Dame would come into that, as I'm sure that you are constantly stressing to young kids the value of an education.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I'll tell you what, man. Absolutely love this. It's called Sports World. And matter of fact, I think I mentioned you guys when we're setting up this interview tonight. I said we have Tony Dungy coming in a couple of days.
Right.
On Saturday, he's going to be speaking for us, man, and it's going to be wonderful. But absolutely, I mean, we talked about multiple subject bullying. I know you guys were talking to Lee about that earlier, which is a big deal. You know, I mean, I love what he was saying, because if the influencers would stand up, it'd be amazing how much they influence so many more. But sometimes those in that position, the athletes, they just stand by and don't do nothing, which really you're doing something, because either you're part of the problem or the solution, you know. So, yeah, absolutely. We talk about education, staying sexually pure, I mean, all these things. And we share our faith. We, you know, we share our faith in Christ with them. That's been the difference in our lives. And so we've been doing it for 14 years, and been the CEO of the company now for the last 3 years. And, wow. I tell you what, man, when you head up something, man, the buck stops there and you get everything that comes with it, you know. But absolutely love what I'm doing and seeing the impact that we have. We generally speak to between 300,000 and 400,000 young people across the country on a yearly basis.
Fantastic.
Nice.
Devon, talk about, you know, you mentioned about Tony Dungy coming to speak, and that's for people mm-hmm. you know, that are in and around Indianapolis or, you know, want to get there to be a part of what you're doing. Talk about how they can find out more information about it and find it online.
Well, I tell you what, man, we're sold out.
Wow, good for you.
I know it's going to happen. I mean, you know, a week and a half ago, I'm like, man, you know what, we may have to, you know, go get some people. And now it's like I'm saying, we took it offline. We shut down the site just because we didn't want to oversell. It's at the Colts facility, and they have a 400 capacity, and they cannot exceed it. You know what I mean? And so it's one of those good problems. Oh yeah, it's good problems.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's Tony Dungy. I mean, come on, man. I mean, and plus it's the combine. I mean, you know, I'll tell you what, man. This city, I'm in love with Indianapolis. When I first got here, like Naptown, I mean, I was like, I'm ready to go. But I'll tell you, man, since I've been here in 1993 on, I've come to love this city. And just, you know, the Final Four will be here. I mean, we have the Combine here this week.
Right.
In a few weeks, man, we got the Final Four right here in Indianapolis.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's really a joy to be here, man.
To that end, Devon, you know, kind of going back to your time playing with the Colts fans voted you the Unsung Hero Award in 1993 for your play on special teams. So, you know, you live there now. Is part of your decision to stay in Indy, you know, to settle there because of the relationship you formed with the fans and the people there in Indianapolis?
Yeah, that's part of it. And then I met this wife, my wife, man. She's so fine. I mean, I had to stay, you know. You know, but yeah, I was a key person to invite these people to the banquet. So literally, I probably 95% of people there is from me, basically. You know, people that I know and friends and so forth. So. It's just a pleasure. And really, man, that's not even my personality. My personality is a quiet personality and you know, more like an introvert. And so to be doing what I'm doing today, man, it's blowing my mind. I mean, you know, most of the guys that I play with that's going to come to the banquet, man, and go, they're like, man, Devo, that's my nickname, Devo, you're talking, you know what I mean? But, you know, and that's what we encourage the young people with, man. You can change. You know what I mean? I think that's one of the greatest gifts we can give to young people is that they can change. You know what I mean? That, you know, whatever bad habits you have, whatever situation you're dealing with, that you can change. And I'm a living witness of that, man, that literally heading up at a speaking organization when I'm not a natural speaker. And then now to put on a big banquet like this and, you know, I've been communicating with Tony, man, and just – it's just a real joy to see my life, how things is working out, and I want that for every and anybody. You know what I mean? Because generally, what's been done to you, you want to do to other people. The flip side of that is, I say 80% of people that have been molested become molesters. You know what I mean? So we get whatever is perpetrated on us, we tend to perpetrate on other people. So right now, the life I'm living, I want that for people, man. That there's a freedom, there's a liberty. You can love, you can laugh. Matter of fact, I just got a new dog. This dog is teaching me how to celebrate. Every time I come in the house, he's happy to see me, man. I'm like, what? I didn't know that was possible, man.
That's great stuff. Devon, for our listeners that want, you know, that you've energized tonight, how can they follow you online, follow your ministry online, and then also across social media?
Okay. All right. I'm not the most technical guy. I'm on it. I know Devon McDonald 57, Twitter, and Facebook, just Devon McDonald. Our website, my company is Sports World, www.sportsworld.org, and you can link up that way. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Pinterest, so just get on those things. Devon McDonald, I'm in Indianapolis, and I have a company that we just hired, so they're helping me to tweet more and to you know, Facebook and do all necessary things that, you know, to keep people informed of what we're doing and some of the results that we're having.
That's great stuff. Devon, it's always such a pleasure having you as part of the show. We can't thank you enough for you know, how supportive you've been of the show and for being on.
Yeah, and I want, man, get me a Jeff Arad on here one day, man. I hope that works out, man. I mean, I want to get that criminal on this show, man. All right.
All right, we'll make that happen. We'll get you and Jeff on one night. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, make it happen, man.
All right, we'll do it.
Hey, thank you guys, man. All right.
Our pleasure.
Thank you. Okay. All right, thank you, Devon. All the best to you and your family. We look forward to catching up soon.
Thank you, man. You guys do a great job, man. Bye-bye.
Thanks, sir.
Good night. Thank you, Devon. Wow. I don't know what could that be like to get Devon McDonald and Jeff Arad on the same show at the same time? That could be chaos.
Oh, well, we could add John Randall, too, if you want some real trash talking. But, yeah, those guys are great. And McDonald, you know, short career, Chris, but, man, you know, I've heard all the good he does with the Sports World Ministries and what he does with kids. And he's our type of guy, the guy we push on this show. He gives back, and he's top shelf, man.
Absolutely right. All right, Bob, it's that time. Time for us to put a bow on this episode. Great job out of you, as always, my friend. Always such a, you know, we talk about pleasures and privileges. Well, it's always a privilege to share the airwaves with you. Thanks for being a part of another show.
It's my pleasure, Chris.
And all right, so course, next week, who are Bob and I going to have? Well, back with us is going to be a guy who's, you know, we talk about people starting to become regulars on the show. Well, Pittsburgh sports talk radio and TV host Paul Alexander is going to be back with us. I keep pinging guys like Paul and Guy Junker. You know, Bob, got to find out, what are my Steelers doing? What do we got to get something going on this defense. So keep pinging those guys to see what we can find out. Former Colts and Seahawks defensive back Nesby Glasgow is going to be back with us. Been a while since Nesby has been on the show, so we look forward to having him back with us. Former Colts and Dolphins fullback Don Nottingham going to be making a return appearance with us. And one of the most passionate guests that we've ever had, Bob, Kyle Turley, going to be back on the show. So no holds barred when we have Kyle out here on the show. So look forward to catching back up with Kyle. It's also been a little while since we've had him here. And then, of course, our good friend John Bach, Brooklyn Bolts head coach John Bach, is going to be back making his monthly appearance on the show. And then, of course, our regular weekly segment, the 12th Man segment with David Meltzer. Look forward to seeing who he's going to have as his guest with us next week. So another great show in store for you next week. Please come back and join us. We hope you will. I want to remind everyone how they can follow us on Twitter. I am at CT Mascaro. Bob is at Bob_Lazzari. The show is at TNT Podcast. Please also do us a favor. Check out our page on Facebook. Give us a like. That's important to us, too. Plus, as we say, you can stay up to date with who our future guests are going to be, and you can stream or download any of our archived episodes by checking out our website, ThursdayNightTailgate.com. Bob, take us home, my friend.
a lot of fun, Chris, with some great guests, as usual, and thanks for your work. And, of course, our thanks to our announcer, Joe Lajanusa, for the great job he does with our weekly intro and ads, and to the aforementioned Kyle Turley, Tim Pickett, and all our friends over at Gridiron Records for their partnership in our upcoming outro music. On behalf of myself and Chris, we thank everyone out there for listening tonight. We appreciate you the most. Until next week, good night, Kevin. Keep fighting.
Coming down the mountain, I take a breath of sin. Can't tell the day or time, but I know this day will end.